Yeah, basically.
My brother lives in Chicago.
My brother lives in Chicago now. He went to Jersey for the week. And now he's having no different weather than Chicago.
I don't even haven't had snow in a couple days.
He said he's been having snow twice a week.
Yeah. Sometimes I find it.
I haven't experienced like an East Coast winter in 15 years.
Yeah, you guys have much worse winters than we do on the East Coast.
Yeah.
And even with the lake, we don't get 2 feet at once.
Crazy. Yeah. I would love to have winter again. Just for one. You know, just like...
I remember 11th or 12th grade, we had off from school. I think it was like December 21st, January 21st, February 21st, and then like March 21st is up in the air and we did or something. Which is the way it worked out, like 3 or 4 months in a row.
Yeah, we shower generally gets snow in like early, mid-April.
Anyways. So
what do you
think? Adam Levine, one of two things that possibly that Adam Levine did that Maral brings down in his Sefer Gvuras Hashem. Gvuras Hashem basically goes through the story of the Avos leading up to the Yetzias Mitzrayim. The Maral's, so to say, take on the event. And the Maral explains that Adam Levine did one of two things. And the two things that could have been gerim, that could have caused the future outcome of Galus Mitzrayim, was either the fact that when Avram Avinu was told by HaKadosh Baruch Hu that, right, Klal Yisrael will inherit Eretz Yisrael, so Avram asked, B'ma Eda, how do I know? Give me a proof. Right? And there was, so to say, chisaron in Avram Avinu's Bitochem. The second reason is that when Avram went to fight against, right, Nimrod and the other three kings, right, four kings versus five kings, so it says either he took, right, a number of the students from his yeshiva to fight the battle, or he took Eliezer with him to fight the battle, whichever it was. Now, those are people that were B'nai Yeshiva, that were learning in the yeshiva. And to use them for battle, that was also not using them for the purposes that they were supposed to be used for. And therefore, Avraham Avinu was punished by Klal Yisrael going into entering into Golos Mitzrayim. Now, if that's true, so how did the punishment fit the crime? If Golos Mitzrayim was because of one of those two areas, then why? What did Golos Mitzrayim help? And what's the point of all Goloses? So what we have to understand is that Avraham Avinu, in whatever way, shape, or form, had a lacking in his absolute bitachon in HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And therefore, Avraham Avinu had to, you know, he used either Talmid Chacham to fight the battle with him, he wouldn't go alone, or he asked HaKadosh Baruch Hu, how do I know? Whatever level we're talking about, Avraham Avinu had a lacking. Golus is to instill into Klal Yisrael B'tochen and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's the whole purpose of Golus. Why? When we're in Geula, we understand that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is around. We have the 10 Nisim happening constantly in the Beis HaMikdash, right? Beis HaMikdash is around. It's, you know, heaven meets earth. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is his presence in the world is noticed. As opposed to when we're in Golus, and things are, so to say, very, very murky and cloudy, and things aren't going the way that they should be going. So that proves if a person understands and has a mun in HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's the whole midah that Klal Yisrael is supposed to be bred into Klal Yisrael. Is the midah of, you know, of belief that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and knowing and knowledge that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is taking care of us, and we don't have to worry about things. Very interesting, at the end of last week's Parsha, and in the Parsha Shmos, so it says that, is that a Chumash Shmos? Right there is. Is that Shmos?
Yeah. Great.
So it says, at the end of Parsha Shmos, how is this divided up? Not the Chuk Yisrael, I'm sorry. There you go. harder to find things in this thing. Says Moshe Rabbeinu complains to Klal Yisrael. Moshe Rabbeinu says to Hakadosh Baruch Hu. So Moshe Rabbeinu complains to Hakadosh Baruch Hu, and he says, "Why did you send me? Why did you send me to Klal Yisrael?" Right? Vayomer Adoni Lama Hariyosu Lama Zev Lama Zev Shlachtani. Why did you send me? Me Oz Baasi Al Pyro Daver B'Shimcha Hira Lama Zev. It got worse. Pyro just sent Klal Yisrael out into the abyss, so to say. And it says, "Vayomer Hashem Moshe." Hashem says to Moshe, "After Tira Eitz Asher Es to the Paro." Now you're gonna see what I do to Paro. And Rashi, of course, has the famous line, "After Tira, After Tira also the Paro, Veloha also the Malchei, Veloha also the Malchei Shiva Umos Kishavi in the Earth." You're gonna see now what I do to Paro, but you're not gonna see now what I do to the seven nations that are going to go into Eretz Yisrael. Moshe Rabbeinu lost out on going into Eretz Yisrael at that point. Why is that? Why did Moshe Rabbeinu lose out? What did he do wrong? He doubted HaKadosh Baruch Hu, right? And therefore what happened? I mean, what's the, you know, we know that the later on in life, that's when Moshe Rabbeinu kind of, so to say, lost his chus in Eretz Yisrael with the main Meriva. So what did now's events do anything about it? Also, we find, very interestingly enough, at the beginning, up until now, in the end of Parsha Shmos, has been using the Shem Havayah, four-letter name of Hashem. At the beginning of Parsha Va'era, it says, "Vayidaber Elkim El Moshe." Elkim speaks to Moshe. Up until now, it was "Vayomer Hashem El Moshe." And now all of a sudden, it switched to "Vayidaber Elkim El Moshe." Why the switch? "Vayomer Elav Ani Hashem." Then it says, Elohim spoke to Moshe, and he said, "I am Hashem." But Moshe forgot in the interim conversation. There was no hefsek in the conversation, right? He was talking to God the whole time. By the way, Moshe, just so you should remember, I'm God. And why did it say Elohim spoke to Moshe, and I am Hashem, the Yudkei Vavkei? So I said this a little bit to the guys on Shabbos, but Mitzrayim was supposed to be the only goalist that we went into. We weren't supposed to go into more goluses. The time was supposed to be the end-all, be-all. Everything was supposed to be finished. But there was a technical problem. Klal Yisrael wasn't surviving. Right, we know that we fell into the Memtesh Shari Tumah. We fell all the way down into the deepest depths of Tumah. Right, we didn't hit Shar Mem. Shar Yud. No, Chamishim, whatever. Right, Shar Nun, excuse me. Right, we didn't hit the rock bottom. But we were going that way. So Kadosh Baruch Hu kind of had to intensify the process. Right? Kadosh Baruch Hu crammed 400 years of suffering into 210 years so that we could, so to say, still work it out. That's why we say in Seder night, Baruch Shemer HaBtechaso. Kadosh Baruch Hu is blessed because he kept his promise. You know? HaKadosh Baruch Hu is blessed that he kept his promise. You know, if Mayor promises me, "Oh, Rabbi, I'll take care of this. Don't worry about it." He does it. I would say, "Wow, Mayor, you're such an amazing guy. If you promise something, you keep it, right?" So why are we saying about HaKadosh Baruch Hu, especially if you're God? Why are we saying about HaKadosh Baruch Hu, "Baruch Shem Ra'atakoso"? God is amazing that you kept your promise. Shechish veshakeit, the God, you know, worked out at the end. So something that I heard is that no. It wasn't that God kept his promise. It's not Baruch HaMekayim HaTachoso. That God kept his promise. Baruch Shomer HaTachoso. He watched over his promise. What does it mean? That HaKadosh Baruch Hu could have kind of just said, "Okay, I promise it's not after 400. If they by default lost, right? They went into the Shar Nun, so I don't have to take them out anymore." HaKadosh Baruch Hu constantly watched over Klaizel's existence within that promise and said, "You know what? They're failing. So what do I got to do? I have to chish it as a case. I have to work out the end. I'll make it 210 years of intensified suffering, started from Yitzchak's lifetime." Right? HaKadosh Baruch Hu didn't just keep his promise. He watched it over. He made sure that it would come out that way. But what happened? But when Moshe Rabbeinu came to complain to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Paro had given the last edict, the last gezeirah on Klal Yisrael. Before... I mean, that was the hardest one, that Klal Yisrael had to go out into the field, they had to spread out. And they had to, right, gather their own straw, make their own bricks. Everything that happens in this in Gaulus Mitzrayim to the end is what's going to happen throughout the rest of the Gauluses. All the rest of the Gauluses reflect what happened to us in Mitzrayim. That's why we're so scattered nowadays. Used to be the Klal Yisrael used to be in condensed units. Right? The Jews were in Spain, most of the Jews of the world were in Spain. The Jews were in Eastern Europe, most of the Jews in the world were in Eastern Europe. Right? Everything is, nowadays, everything's all over the place.
Youngstown,
Ohio, right? We have Jews all over the place nowadays. Why? Because, again, everything is replicating. That was Power's last edict, because the Klal Yisrael had to be spread out. We weren't unified in the unit. And Moshe came to complain to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, says, Klal Yisrael can't take it. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu said to Moshe, he goes, okay, but because Klal Yisrael can't take it, so now you're not going to be able to go into Eretz Yisrael. Why? Because if Moshe Rabbeinu would have entered into Eretz Yisrael, and he would have built the Beis HaMikdash, the Beis HaMikdash would never have been destroyed. Now that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not going to be able to finish off Golos Mitzrayim, it's going to necessitate the future Goluses. And therefore, now Moshe, you're going to see what I did to Paro. But you're not going to be able to see what I do to the seven kings in Eretz Yisrael, the seven nations in Eretz Yisrael. Because now you can't go in. Because if you go in, it's going to be a final goal. It's a final Geula. And that's not going to happen anymore. And that's why it starts with the parsha of the Eretz, is by, right, by Yomer Elokim El Moshe, because God now has to switch from being a Rachamim on Karsha, now he has to be turned into judgment on Paro. Because originally it wasn't supposed to happen that way right away. Elokim is always, right, the name of God that represents Din. But God says to Moshe, right, Ani Hashem. Don't think that everything that I was doing to Klal Yisrael before was out of Din. It was out of Rachamim to Klal Yisrael. I wanted Klal Yisrael to be able to get finish everything off now. But now that I'm switching over to Din, now it can't be that way anymore. Now I just have to go take out Pyro and, right? And that's it. You're not going to be able to go enter into Eretz Yisrael. It's going to be the necessity for future Goluses. And so we have to learn from Golus Mitzrayim the way things, you know, I guess, carried themselves out through Mitzrayim, right? How we fell in Mitzrayim, how we're going to get out of Mitzrayim, in order to see, you know, I guess, how to get out of this Golus. Very interesting thing we see. Two, I guess, contradicting medrashes. The medrash at the beginning of Parshas Vayechi says, Vayechi Yaakov Beretz Mitzrayim, Loma Parshas Ustuma. Why is this parsha closed off? Right, it's missing the nine letter space that's usually in between each and every parsha in the Torah. Why? El kevin shenifter Avinu Yaakov hischila shibud Mitzrayim. When Yaakov Avinu died, that's when the shibud of Mitzrayim started. Al Yisrael. There's a different lashon, right? From a different medrash says, right? Because when Yaakov Avinu died, Nistemu Einayim Libon Shel Klal Yisrael Mitzaras HaShibud. The eyes and ears of Klal Yisrael closed off from the Tzara of the Shibud. But wait a second. When did Shibud Mitzrayim start? It started right away when Yaakov Avinu died? If you look at another medrash, the medrash at the beginning of Parsha Shmos, the medrash says, Yosef and all his brothers died, and all the rest of that generation died out. Lelamdecha, to teach you, she calls man shayer echad mehem kayam meoisim shiur delu Mitzrayim, as long as one of those people was alive, from those people that entered into Mitzrayim, lo shiddu hamitzrayim b'Yisrael. Wait a second. Which one was it? Did it start after the death of Yaakov Avinu? Or did it start after, you know, all the other Shvatim took how many more years to die? Now, Yosef was the first one to die of the Shvatim. The other ones lived, let's say, took another 70, 100, till everybody from that generation died out. So, when did Shiva Mitzrayim start? So, you know, on Seder night, we talk about, right, we say, you know, after the child asked the Manishtana, so we say, right, Avodam Ayinu, and Avodam Ayinu we answer, and we say to the child, right, if HaKadosh Baruch Hu would not have taken us out of Mitzrayim, we would all be Meshubet to Paro nowadays. Oh, so grandchildren, great-grandchildren. And of course, everybody asks the obvious question. You don't think that there would be an Abraham Lincoln somewhere in the history of mankind to, you know, make some emancipation proclamation and say, you know, it's not friendly, you know, all men are created equal and we should all be free? We'd all be still slaves to Egypt and to Paro? Are there slaves in Egypt anymore? So what does it mean?
We would have had to praise Paro if he was the one who physically
freed us. That's one shot. They say that we would have to have gratitude to Paro, right? We'd be indebted to Paro. The word Meshubed doesn't necessarily mean that I'm indebted to somebody. But why am I indebted to somebody? What makes me indebted to them? It's because there's a connection. I'm connected to that person. The person gives you, let's say, does a favor for you. You're indebted to him because you're connected to him. Right? And you're in some way tied to him. Right? You're Meshubed. Meshubed means that you are not controlled, but you are, so to say, you're connected. You're connected, right? Shibin Nechasim. You know what Shibin Nechasim is called? You guys should be learning then in Ksuvas, right? A woman, her Ksuva, right? Ksuva is Meshubet to Nechasim. What does that mean? That there's a field that's connected to the Ksuva that the 200 Zuzas she's going to collect, she's going to inherently collect from that field. So she made the connection. If we left Mitzrayim 1 second before, you know, after that we did, we would still be connected to Paro. The influence that Paro and the Mitzrayim placed into us and placed on us never would have gone away. Mitzrayim comes from the Lashon of Meitzar. You know what Meitzar is? Min ha-Meitzar korosiyo. What is a Meitzar? No. That's mi mamakim. Oh, right. Meitzar is a prison. Mitzrayim was a prison. You never heard there's a famous message that said that before Klal Yisrael left Mitzrayim, there was never a slave to ever leave Mitzrayim. No slave ever escaped. Why? Because Mitzrayim was the pit of all taiva in the world. And they were Meshabed people, meaning a person becomes totally connected and enslaved by those desires. Mitzrayim always represents the Yetzer Hara in its fullest effect. Right? All the physical desires in the world. That's why Mitzrayim, how did they used to grow their grain? They used to grow their grain through the overflowing of the Nile River. Right? And so Yaakov Avinu gave the bracha to power that every time it walked by the Nile River, it would overflow. And the Nile River overflowing, basically it means that Mitzrayim wasn't affected by rainfall. Rain always represents HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Shefa in the world. HaKadosh Baruch Hu giving his bracha into the world and being dependent on HaKadosh Baruch Hu. As you see now in Eretz Yisrael, we are very dependent on rain. And when it doesn't rain, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't give us that bracha, we suffer. Egypt's not like that. Why? Because Egypt represents all of physicality in the world. Therefore, what does physicality try to tell you? I'm in control of my own life. I'm not dependent on any other being. I'm not dependent on God. I can run things myself. And that's exactly why Mitzrayim, so to say, was somewhat of its own self-existing environment. Because that's what Mitzrayim represented. And therefore, when we say that we become, we got out of the shibud of Mitzrayim on Pesach, You know, we say that every single year, right? The Pesach was called Zman Tcherusenu. Klal Yisrael talked about becoming B'nai Charan even when we were in Golos. We're not free. How could we say that? No, that what does it mean to be free? What does it mean to be free? What does it mean to be a free man?
And being indebted to Hashem.
That's true. Right? But you're probably just feeding me that answer because you know that I want it. But seriously, what does secular society decide that what it means to be free? I'm saying, what does secular society, how do they define freedom? They define freedom basically by you can do whatever you want. Right? That's freedom. Freedom is that I can do whatever I want in the world. Nobody stops me. However, if we actually think about things, is that person really free? I always give the example. You know, imagine you're in college and you're studying for your MCATs. Okay? MCATs is the make it or break it test to get into medical school. You do bad on your MCATs, no matter how good your GPA is, no matter how many extracurricular activities you have, no matter whatever it is, if you do bad on your MCATs, you are not getting into medical school. Okay? So imagine you take, you know, you're studying very late at night, you want to study your MCATs, and all of a sudden, 10 o'clock at night, right, a girl calls you up on the phone and asks you to study with her. And obviously she has other intentions involved. If a guy gives into that, right, and then goes to the girl's house, let's say, and does whatever he does, and the next morning he's rocked for his MCATs, that guy's free. He did what he wanted to, but he couldn't control himself. Right? Couldn't control his physical desires. Right? And he knew that, and trust me, he'll regret much more missing out on his MCATs than he will missing out on that one-night stand. Yet, somehow he couldn't say no. That's a slave. That's a slave. People are slaves to their physical desires. They can't say no to themselves. There are two words in the Hebrew language that represent freedom, which mean freedom. There's what we call chafshi. Right? You ask any Israeli when they are, you know, on vacation, now what are you doing? I need a chafish. Chafish means freedom. And then there's chayrus. And on that, Chazal tells us, what does chayrus mean? In the ben chayrin el amisha eisik b'tera. The only person who's a ben chayrin at the mission in Pirkei Avos. The only person who's a ben chayrin is somebody who learns Torah. You would think just the opposite, right? Somebody who learns Torah, right? I remember a Rav in Muncie was once walking down the street and he was approached by a non-Jew. And the non-Jew basically said, you Jews are slaves. You're told what to do all the time. We Jews are free. Chayrus doesn't mean that I can do whatever the heck I want. Because nobody can do whatever the heck he wants at all times. Chayrus is a selected freedom. What does that mean, a selective freedom? It means that I'm free from anything that's going to hold me back from doing what I want to accomplish in this world. I'm free to accomplish. Nothing's holding me back. That's what chayrus means. That's what it means, Enoch ben Chorin, Elam Misha Eitz B'Torah. The only person who's a ben Chorin in this world is somebody who learns Torah, somebody who learns how to be in control of his physical desires, somebody who learns how to break free. That's somebody who's a ben chorin. And the only person who can do that is somebody who learns Torah. You might be chofshi without Torah, but then you're not really free. You're really a slave. Because you can't say no to yourself. So what does it mean to be mishuvah, to be a slave? So what it means is like this. Is that granted, the actual physical slavery in Mitzrayim did not start till after all the Shvatim died. However, there was a greater sense of Shibud that started. Mitzrayim was all about the prison, not just the physical prison of us having to listen to somebody else and to work because somebody else told us to work. But Mitzrayim also represents the absolute being bound by the physicality of the world. being bound by your physical desires, being, you know, in control by your physical desires. That's why it says that the malach that controlled Mitzrayim was the strongest malach. It was the strongest malach. Well, what is the malach? The malach that runs all the nations of the world, all the non-Jews. Right? And we said before, right, the non-Jews are the ones that are run by malachim. The Jews tap right into HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Everything about Mitzrayim was everything that was the pinnacle of the physical world. Everything was great. So the shibud that was in Mitzrayim was the shibud, the connection to your to physical desires in the world. And that's why it says that when Yaakov Avinu died, or when did Klal Yisrael start falling from Madrega Madrega into the 49th level of Tumah? At what point did they start falling?
Yaakov.
After Yaakov died. That's when the shibud of Mitzrayim started. After they lost Yaakov Avinu and they lost that, you know, patriarch figure of what it meant to be a perfect individual, what it meant to be totally davak in HaKadosh Baruch Hu, as we express that Yaakov Avinu was the one who was able to live in Mitzrayim a life of like living in Gan Eden. Yaakov Avinu lived in Mitzrayim for how many years? 17, which is the gematria of what word? Tov. Right? The Tov, the level of Tov, of utter goodness, which is the life of Olam Haba, Yaakov Avinu was able to live that in Mitzrayim. But when Yaakov Avinu was Nifter, that's when the real Shibud of Mitzrayim started. And actually, a different message brings down, that's when Mitzrayim started to ask the Yidden, you know, come work for us. Come start working with us. Let's, you know, let's join forces, let's build cities together. Blah, 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 yada, yada, yada. While Yaakov Avinu was alive, none of the Egyptians had the goal to approach such a subject. But once Yaakov Avinu died, that's when the Shibud started. Even though the physical labor had not started yet. But that's when Klal Yisrael started to plummet. So it means Nistimu Einehem the Libun shall Yisrael. Their eyes and their hearts got closed off. They lost sight of where their hearts should be, of where their hearts should be connected to, and they started going after more Egyptian-like things. And therefore they fell Madrega, Acha Madrega, Acha Madrega, Acha Madrega, until they reached the 49th level of Tumah. So we have to realize that, you know, the Yitzhara comes to have tainas on us. And tainas to us. Oh, come, let's just do this. Let's join together. Let's work together. If we had a clear vision of who we were supposed to be and what we were supposed to be connected to, he couldn't even start. There's a Gemara in the Chagiga like that, right? When Yeshua and Hananya died, they were always worried about what was going to happen to us because of the Goyim and the Apikorsim who were going to attack us with their tainas. We're not going to have to know what to answer them back. To fear, we lose tzaddikim the way that tzaddikim are supposed to lose. We lose sight of what we're supposed to be like. And that's what the Medrash is telling us. Is that the worst thing that can happen to us is more than the actual physical slavery, the actual meshubit tapir. Right? To be connected to what his value system is. Be connected to be imprisoned by our physical desires. There's no greater slave than that. And the only person who's free is somebody who learns the Torah and somebody who learns how to deal with his life and how to say no to himself. That person is the person who's only free. Go get blitzed.